And I realized that my journey was going to be very, very different than other people's journeys because I had never seen someone that looks like me. And I know a lot of folks in the DEI community, regardless of their identity, have had that experience where they don't see someone who looks like them. And that's the experience that I had. And there were a lot of people that wouldn't have blamed me for getting off the law school and the legal education track, but I stayed on, and I am so grateful that I did. So I take all of those experiences, my own lived experiences, the obstacles that I faced and overcome to help open doors for those who want to come after me.
Hello, and thank you for joining us on Dwayne Morris DEI 360 with Joe West, where we feature candid conversations advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion. I'm Yumika Anderson Howard, DEI manager at the firm. On today's episode, our guest, Angela Winfield, joins Joe in a discussion on leaning into the tough questions on diversity as a blind Black woman.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe West. I'm a partner at Dwayne Morris. I also have the privilege of serving as the firm's Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer. And I'm really thrilled to be interviewing Angela Winfield today. Angela, how are you?
I am doing very well, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing great. So Angela is one of my colleagues in the diversity and equity and inclusion space. She's Vice President and Chief Diversity Officer for LSAC. I'm going to ask her, for those who may not know, although I suspect the vast majority of our audience either knows or should know about LSAC, I'm going to ask her to mention and talk a little bit about LSAC, what it is, what it does, and then to get into her role a little bit, Angela. So let's start there. Tell us about LSAC.
Absolutely. So LSAC is the Law School Admission Council. And for those of you who don't automatically recognize us, when I tell you the thing that we're most well known for, you're going to remember us. Create and administer the law school admission test, the LSAT. And that's one of the things that we do. We do so much more than that. Our mission is actually around diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's really about creating access and justice and equity in the legal profession. And we have a variety of programs that we offer from pre-law through practice.
Thank you for that, Angela. Full disclosure for everyone, as a member of the Council for the Section of Legal Education and Admissions to the Bar, and in fact, the incoming chairperson, I'm very familiar with LSAC and the great work that LSAC does. Talk a little bit about your role at LSAC, and then we'll sort of, you know, talk a little bit further about some of the things that are happening in the space.
So like you said, my title is Chief Diversity Officer. I'm also Vice President there. But in my role, and I've been in the role for just over a year now, it's really about setting the direction and the strategy for diversity, equity, and inclusion. DEI is at the core of what we do, but part of my role is really defining and operationalizing that. So in my first year, one of the big goals that I had was doing this really broad, ambitious listening tour, working with my team to evaluate all of the DEI programs that we have to really ask the difficult questions. Have they been effective? And if so, have they been effective enough? If not, why are we still doing them? What do we need to do? And we completed all of that work and have set some really ambitious goals in a phased way to help diversify the profession.
So you're at a very critical juncture in the educational lifespan. Let me ask you a couple of tough questions. And Angela, I know you well enough to know that you can handle anything I throw your way. Our profession still remains the least diverse, if not one of the least diverse, white collar professions. Where is the disconnect? Where are the challenges? At what point in the pipeline do we find choke points? And what can be done to facilitate a greater number of diverse lawyers making it into our profession?
I certainly don't shy away from the tough questions. I actually lean into them. So I'm glad you asked this question. There are two areas in particular that I think are some of the drop-off points where we're losing diversity. One is in the early outreach, in the early pipeline. Right. What I'm hearing from students, both law students, pre-law students, and just general students, is they're not learning and seeing themselves in the profession. So they're not thinking about law as a viable career for them. They don't see themselves in it. So that's one place. And that's where we're going to get the volume. If we expose students at an early age to the possibility of going to law school, of practicing law, or doing a law adjacent, you know, JD required career, that's something that's very, very needed, right? People need to see themselves in the profession before they pursue the profession. So that's one area. The other area is on the other end of the pipeline, and that's attrition out. We're seeing some drop off there, where it's what's very interesting when you actually look at the numbers. If you look at the diversity and the demographics of undergraduate students, and you compare that to folks who are applying to law school, there's not a big disparity there. It's the raw numbers and the volume that's not moving where we need more so we can see the actual increase in the profession when we get to the end of the pipeline.
What's the trend looked like over the last few years? And of course, let's adjust for COVID. What's the trend look like in terms of people seeking to enter law school and coming through LSAC and the LSAT process?
Yeah, so entering and applying to law school, sitting for the LSAT and attending law school, we're seeing small, steady, incremental ticks up. And it's steady. That's what I'm going to say. What we did see in the last cycle was a very large spike in interest and also entering in fall 2021. We have the most diverse law school entering class. And in fall 2021, it was about 35% racial and ethnic minorities, people of color, and 57% female. So that's what we're seeing. That was probably the most diverse ever. It would be wonderful if we can maintain that. And those are the things that we're looking at, is what happened there? How do we ensure that we're not making these small incremental changes, but really significant differences? Because that's what's going to move the needle, and that's what's going to diversify the profession.
Well, I mentioned COVID and the pandemic, but when people think about 2020, the other thing that obviously jumps out at us is the George Floyd effect. Yes. And I'm wondering how much of that uptick in diverse interests in 2021 was part of the George Floyd effect, if at all.
I think a significant portion. We don't have direct, you know, data to say that this is exactly what it was, but we do have some qualitative information from students who were sitting for the LSAT and applying, where they are indicating that they have a strong interest in social justice, which is really important. The other thing that I do want to mention, because social justice is incredibly important, we do need more diversity there, but we need more diversity in all areas of the legal profession. And I think part of what the George Floyd effect did, and what we need to build on and amplify, is that the legal system touches many areas of life, and it touches and it can either lead to, impact, or change how people experience equity and whether they're experiencing equity. And if we amplify that message, that if you want to make a change, if you want more equity in society, law is one way to do that. Lawyers are and can be the change makers. We know how systems work. We know the rules. We know how to make arguments. We know how to poke holes in arguments. And I think it's a message that more folks, as a students and people from other careers who maybe looking to switch careers, need to understand that if you want to make a difference and make a change, the law is a pathway for doing that.
Well, since you mentioned people making a difference, let's talk a little bit about Angela. It's unusual for me to say about someone that graduated from Columbia undergrad and Cornell Law School that their academic credentials, probably the least impressive thing about them, I think some people who know about your journey and your story, particularly your membership as a part of the diverse disability community, but some people don't. So tell a little bit about your story and about your journey and how you are using that to affect people's lives.
Sure. Yeah, I am proudly and unabashedly a blind Black woman. And I own all three of those things fully. I was born sighted, and I was born to Black parents who grew up in poverty. My mother grew up in the segregated South in North Carolina. And my father grew up, he was born in Virginia and grew up in upstate New York in Monticello and then moved to Newburgh. And both of them were first generation college grads. And the thing that they instilled in me was education. And they held me to the same standards as my brother and sister. They did not treat me differently because I had a visual impairment at the time. I was expected to do all the same things that my siblings did, in school, out of school, around the house, and chores, and all of that. And I'm grateful for that experience for them because it gave me the foundation. So when I was 10, I was diagnosed, and I was classified as legally blind. And I wanted to be a lawyer at that time. And I realized that my journey was going to be very, very different than other people's journeys because I had never seen someone that looks like me. And I know a lot of folks in the DEI community, regardless of their identity, have had that experience where they don't see someone who looks like them. And that's the experience that I had. And I had to figure out whether I was going to take that path. And I decided to take the path. And along the way, I had some flare-ups with my condition. And when I was in undergrad, I had a flare-up and lost the rest of my usable sight. So that's when I became totally blind. And again, had to ask myself, am I going to continue on this path and do it or not? And there were a lot of reasons why I wasn't going to. And there were a lot of people that wouldn't have blamed me for getting off the law school and the legal education track, but I stayed on. And I am so grateful that I did. So I take all of those experiences, my own lived experiences, the obstacles that I faced and overcome to help open doors for those who want to come after me.
I mean, your story is extraordinary. You mentioned three different categories, blind, Black, and female. And I suspect alone, each of those particular categories would present challenges. I can only imagine having all three of those issues at once. The challenges that you might have had to face and overcome. Can you mention maybe one anecdote that you'd like to share where you had some challenges because of those issues? And how you addressed and handled them and overcame them at the time.
Sure. So one that stands out to me is when I was a 1L at Cornell Law School and I was going through the on-campus interview process. I talked to a number of large top firms, major markets, and I got a lot of callbacks. And on one of these callbacks, I was speaking to a partner. And I got through the interview. It was a decent conversation. And at the end of it, he actually said to me, you know, you're saying all the right things. You have the right educational pedigree, but I just don't know how I would do my job if I couldn't see. So I don't see how you could possibly be successful here as an attorney. And that really took me by surprise in a certain way, because one, you know, he's a partner at a major firm. He should know better than to say something like that in an interview.
Something so blatantly illegal.
That's right. Right. But he did. Right. So I took a moment and I was like, well, you know, at this point, I just need to be honest. And I said, well, you know, I don't know how you would do your job. And I don't know who you are and how you respond to things, but I know myself and I know what I'm capable of and I can do this job. So that's how I responded to that. I did not get an offer to that firm. And I'd like to think that if I did receive an offer, I would have turned it down. But that is, you know, that's one thing that I experienced. And, it, you know, what it showed me is not just that, you know, there is bias and there is discrimination and some people have the gall to actually, you know, be really blatant about it, is that there are certain expectations. Like we all have these, you know, I don't want to say low expectations, but expectations. And part of being inclusive is going beyond that, like thinking, you know, what could be, what is possible, and that we don't know everything, that we need to be open to new ways and new possibilities, and even, you know, differences in how people approach their work and or how they're able to have success.
Well, I'm thinking about two things. One, what that says about you and about your character, and by extension, your parents and what they instilled in you. I'm also thinking about that individual, whomever he is and wherever he might be right now. And I suspect that he probably has not fared nearly as well as Angela Winfield has, simply because we know who had the strength of character and the tools to be successful and who did not. So kudos to you on that. We have just a couple of minutes left, Angela. You have occasion in your work to come across, you know, either in real time and in real life or virtually or just through the work that you do and by extension, a large number of people who are trying to enter this profession. I was on a panel a couple of years ago, and at the end of the panel, one of the panel members, it was a fairly large room. It might've been at an ABA or an NBA conference. And one of the panel members asked people to raise their hands if they would encourage their kids to enter the profession. And maybe one hand went up, which I thought was very, very interesting and very telling. What would you say to people? What's the value case you would make to an undergraduate or even someone who's in high school who might be considering the legal profession as an option? What's the case you would make to them? Such that they might seriously consider it?
Such a great question. And I've seen that before in conferences, and it breaks my heart when we in the profession wouldn't recommend it to our children. What I say to young people is similar to what I said earlier and what I began with, is that if you want to make a difference, the legal profession is a way to do that. And not only that, is that if we want to truly reflect what, and I'm going to be US specific here, that if we want our legal system, the American legal system, to truly reflect what it was meant to be and what it was meant to do and to uphold our democracy, it needs to reflect not only the faces, but the experiences and perspectives of students from all backgrounds in every area of law. And if, you know, and I tell students this, you know, I said, if you have a particular interest, if you like to think critically, you know, law touches everything. It touches everything. It touches the sports industry. It touches the entertainment industry. It touches science and intellectual property. I think, and what I do is I make these connections for students to say, you know, well, if you want to learn more about this and not just the mechanics of it, you know, think about the legal side and explore that. You don't have to pursue it, but at least give it a chance and give it an opportunity.
Angela, what a brilliant response to that question, and what a fantastic case that you made. So I hope that anyone who's listening out there who's giving consideration to the profession will consider it. And frankly, maybe those of us who are already in the profession will gain a greater appreciation from it because of the points that you've made. So thank you so much, Angela. It's always such a privilege to me. I've had occasion to be on panels with you, to moderate panels with you. I come away from it every time learning something new. And each time I go into it thinking that I couldn't have more respect and admiration from you, but darn it, you increase it every single time. So thank you so much.
Thank you. The feeling is mutual, Joe.